Good morning. It's Monday, the 20th of March. Welcome to our roundtable panel, and it's very nice to have you with us. An abbreviated panel this morning as we go to NPR coverage beginning at 10 o'clock this morning to hear the House Intelligence Committee holding a hearing on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election. FBI Director James Comey and the Director of the NSA, Admiral Mike Rogers, expected to testify. So that should be quite the brouhaha. A dramatic climax is what CNN is calling it. So we look forward to hearing that on our airwaves beginning at 10 o'clock in the morning. But from now until then, we have a panel discussion. And let me introduce our panelists to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Ray. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, listeners.
Very nice to have you with us. Ray Graff is here.
Good morning.
WAMC's intrepid newsman.
Good morning, Ray Alan. Graff. Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, listeners.
Intrepid.
Yes. Insipid, really, actually.
And Mike Spain is with us, the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, who would normally be with us on Tuesday.
What happened?
But we're going to be preempted tomorrow for the Neil Gorsuch hearings. So
hearings everywhere.
That's right. Mm. Hearings. So we'll be going to those tomorrow. So Mike was nice enough to come in today.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So he would not miss a slot, and because, really, nobody else wanted to come today.
Ah, which explains my presence as well. And I want to thank everyone who didn't show up.
I sent out quite the list over the weekend.
You did.
You were the only two who responded, so thank you very much.
Welcome to the bottom of the barrel, boys and girls. Here we are.
Well, it's very nice to have you all with us. Let us get. We just heard a little Chuck Berry going in.
Yeah.
And 90 years old passed. We had two sad deaths. Chuck Berry died at 90 years old.
Yeah.
And at the age of 88, journalist Jimmy Breslin passed away over the weekend.
Yeah, he was a terrific writer. Of course, everybody talks about the famous columns that he wrote, the one where he interviewed the guy who dug the grave at Arlington for President Kennedy after Kennedy was assassinated. And then he also interviewed the two police officers after John Lennon was murdered. And one of them had been a teenager out at the airport when the Beatles came in February of 1964. So, I mean, he always seemed to make these connections with people. And then there were the Son of Sam series that he wrote. So he's pretty famous and pretty good writer.
And you know, the one that I'll never forget, I think I'll never forget it. Maybe I never saw it. It was the one in which they were taking either Donald Manus from Queens after he had been exposed, you know, and he was being led off into the elevator, and his kid was crying. And I believe it was Breslin who wrote, maybe one of these days these jokers would just think about this scene when they're doing it. In other words, that the kids and everybody would be so let down. It was an incredible column.
Yeah, he liked to get close to the people and tell it from their perspective. He was a voice of the people, and he was a terrific writer. Started out with the Herald Tribune, worked his way up, and then he was at the New York Daily News for a long time. Ended his career as a daily newspaper columnist at Newsday, and wrote a lot of books and ran for city council president once.
Did you ever get to meet him, Mike?
No, I did not. Yeah,
I had breakfast with him one time, I think at the Democratic convention, with another reporter, and you know, he was gruff. He was a gruff fellow.
Yeah,
gruff is a good word.
You know,
you interviewed him.
He didn't suffer anybody lightly.
I interviewed him a couple of times, and I have to say, the last interview that he did on the Catholic Church, I didn't run because it was just it was a lot of.
A lot of baggage?
Very profane.
Really?
But also, very...
Now, how long ago was that?
Oh, that wasn't... I think, Everything's relevant. I think I want to say like maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that.
Do you still have it?
That's a
fun drive premium.
None of that could go out, I think.
Okay. Give me Breslin on the Catholic Church.
No, we made the decision. I will tell you, though, if you get a chance and go to Newsday and you just Google Jimmy Breslin Trump, Newsday collected all of his columns that he has written over the years, going back decades, that he's written about Donald Trump. And there's some great foresight in those columns, and they're very enjoyable reading, especially now. So we certainly remember Jimmy Breslin this morning, and of course Chuck Berry, one of the greats.
Oh yeah, he had those three chords down. He was good. No, I know. Listen, it's the basis of all of rock and roll. Yeah, I think he was the true king of rock and roll.
I once saw him at one of the first concerts, and this was, I think, 1983 at the Valley Forge Music Fair in Devon, Pennsylvania. Robert Klein opened.
Nice.
And Chuck Berry was the main performer. And they had a 7 o'clock and a 10 o'clock show, and Chuck never showed up. Finally, Robert Klein came out to tell us that Chuck Berry had been arrested for tax evasion backstage.
Ouch. And you were there.
I was there.
Amazing.
I was there. If you go to our archive and look up Robert Klein, he tells a story on the interview that we did with him. It's a pretty great story. So
yeah, it's a good story.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get down to business and talk about other stuff that is making news. You know, the important stuff that is going on. And we begin with the Justice Report. I'm going to kind of tie these two in together. The intelligence chairman says that the Justice Report shows no evidence for Donald Trump's claims of wiretapping during the campaign. This comes from Representative Devin Nunes of California, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He and the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee said Sunday that new documents provided to Congress by the Justice Department provided no proof to support President Trump's claim that his predecessor had ordered wiretaps of the Trump Tower. Now, that brings us to today's hearing, of course, in which FBI Director James Comey will be talking to the committee and the House Intelligence Committee to speak about alleged meddling in the 2016 elections. And it's the first time that Comey and Rogers will testify publicly since Trump took office 2 months ago. And so some of the questions to be answered during this hearing: can Democrats unearth a smoking gun? Will Comey admit to an investigation? Is it just about wiretapping, or could there be other surveillance involved? Will the Republicans cross the White House? And also, the ultimate question, where the hell do we go from here? Alan, what do you make of all this?
Well, the guy I'm really keeping an eye on here is Comey. Now, let's remember who this person is. He wanted to keep his job. Clearly, in the run-up to the election, he made a huge difference in throwing Hillary under the bus by announcing that there was more email than was thought. They were going to reopen the investigation. Well, my dear friends, think about that for a minute. Here he is now saying we don't comment on ongoing investigations, and yet he won probably more than anybody else won a presidential election for Donald Trump. So does Trump, if he goes up there and double-crosses Trump and says it's all a bunch of nonsense, and it's not only if he says it, but how he says it that's going to be very important. Because it says, oh, there's no proof, whatever. But if he says, he says it emphatically, it could be a body blow for Trump. So I do think that's extremely important. And the thing here is, as you know, Joe, I've talked about the whoosh factor for years. Once it looks like Trump is damaged and might not survive, you're going to find an awful lot of people on the Republican side saying, uh-oh, it's me or him, it's going to be him. I'm going to survive, and I'll be somebody who leads in this. And we saw that pretty much in the Watergate investigation also.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, and I don't know if this is a major thing or a minor thing, but when Comey spoke to the to Congress and senators on Wednesday of last week and had his had the behind closed doors classified meeting with representatives, the people who came out of that meeting, both Republicans and Democrats, looked like they had been just hit over the head with a 2x4. They had no color in their face. They just like they were like in a daze. So you wonder sort of, well, okay, what, first of all, obviously, what did they say to cause that kind of reaction? But also then, will we hear any of that or even an inkling of that today, or will it still remain classified and we'll sort of go merrily along?
Well, you got to remember, Comey enraged Trump last summer when he came out and said Hillary Clinton committed no crime although it was, I think he criticized it in some way and said it was reprehensible or, you know, very poor judgment. But he said she committed no crime when she kept emails, State Department emails, on her home computer server. So Trump hated him after that and criticized him. And then about a week before the election, of course, he came out and said they found more emails that they were investigating, including some on the laptop of Anthony Weiner, who's already been tainted. And Trump loved him after that, and he praised him and kept him. Not that he could fire him necessarily, but he endorsed him and basically made it clear he was going to back Comey staying there. Now, today, if Comey comes out and establishes without a doubt that there's no evidence, the FBI has looked into it to support the claim that the Obama administration, that President Obama had ordered wiretaps on Trump Tower, Trump will just be mad at him again. I mean, it's just back and forth and back and forth. I don't know how it really changes everything.
But he can and will, based on what we saw with Pete Bharara, fire him. His word means nothing. He says, well, he's good today. He's not good tomorrow, but he will fire him if he thinks he's been double-crossed.
So, Joe, the focus of this hearing today is threefold, if I understand correctly. One, it's about whether or not the Obama administration wiretapped Trump Tower. Two, it's about alleged Russian meddling in the election. And then is there a third component in that? Are they looking today at who leaked the Flynn conversation with the Russian ambassador?
I think my understanding is there's actually the focus of the hearing is really only the one thing of what was, because they're tying, I believe, they're tying the surveillance of the Russian issue and the surveillance and the wiretapping of Trump Tower into the Russian issue during the campaign. So I think it's sort of, from my understanding at least, that it's that one overarching issue that is the subject of the hearing.
So the Democrats are expected to press Comey on the Obama wiretap, alleged Obama wiretap.
Yes, sir.
Right. But I think if there's any if they assert that there was broad surveillance by the Justice Department on or the CIA, for that matter, on Russian activities and may have captured something that was going in and out of the Trump Tower during the campaign, Trump will turn that into a confirmation that he was correct when he said he was being wiretapped by the Obama administration, and he'll dismiss it.
Now, meanwhile, on the Sunday shows, Alan, we saw so many people, Republicans, Democrats, saying, look, there's nothing to this. We had two or three representatives of the Republican Party say this is a wild goose chase. And as far as the wiretapping goes, and that the real issue should be about the Russian influence on the election. So I'm curious as to at what. Obviously, many of those members know a lot more than what they're saying. And
yeah,
how much of that do you think we'll find out?
Well, you know, Joe, you really have gone right to the heart of what's wrong with briefings of the kind these guys went through that they know stuff that can't be said. You know, I mean, that is really an awful conundrum for them to be in. So they're sitting there. They know there are some things they're not allowed to say. It's like junior high school when somebody says, oh, well, you know, your girlfriend was going around with somebody else, but don't tell them I said so. Well, I mean, on a larger basis, this is a very scary thing for these guys. As you said, they came out ashen-faced. They had to hear something, and I don't know that we're going to hear that today.
It is interesting. And then that final question that I brought up, when we look at the things that we're hoping to, the five things to watch at the House Intelligence Committee, there's an article in the Washington Post this morning, and the all-important number five is, where do we go from here? You have the hearing. You have all this pomp and circumstance. It is considerable. It is understandable. This is an investigation about an election that perhaps was stolen. And with James Comey being very careful at all times, and of course, we will also hear from Mike Rogers as well, and what will he say? You do have to wonder, will this provide us any clarity? But where do we go from here? Do we move on to the other stuff?
How can you know where you go until you hear what you hear?
Well,
no, Ray's right. I think that's right. Look, it may well turn out that if it's explosive, there get to be increased calls for an independent prosecutor. Or for
to prosecute
a special
what, though, Alan?
Well, it depends on what we're hearing, Ray, as you just said. I mean, a lot depends on whether, if it turns out those ashen-faced people that Joe described heard something that could lead to an impeachment. If Trump had dealings, for example, with the Russians, we don't know that, but if Trump had dealings with the Russians or Trump's people had dealings with the Russians and the electoral process was corrupted that way, I think you might well go to any of those things I just suggested. But we don't know, and you're right. We don't know yet.
Well, there's certainly, I don't think there's going to be anything impeachable if they refute and establish that there's no credibility to the Trump allegation
no.
that Obama.
No.
You know, that's just a political thing. It'll have to be
right.
Direct collusion with the Russians during the campaign. That would amount to a crime, and we'll find out, perhaps. Or not.
But likewise.
All clear as mud.
But likewise, if Comey says, listen, we have no evidence that there was collusion by the Trump administration with the Russians, if he says that, does that still put the matter to rest for Democrats who would. At least in part insinuate that this is an illegitimate presidency?
Well, I suspect not, Ray, because I don't trust Comey, and I don't think a lot of the people who are listening to this based on his interference in the U.S. election trust Comey. So why in the world would it put it to rest? I think what will happen is people will say, you know, he's just shilling for the other guys.
And what if his public statements contradict what they heard behind closed doors? How do they handle that? That's the difficulty here.
Indeed. Indeed.
All right. We have about a half hour before we go over to the hearing. We're going to take a break, and we will be back. A quick update from the BBC, and we will return after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning in a somewhat abbreviated panel. We are on until 10 o'clock, and then we'll turn it over to our friends at NPR for the coverage of the House Intelligence Committee holding their hearing on Russian interference in the 2016 election. And also happening today, of course, are the opening statements in the hearing for Neil Gorsuch. The Supreme Court nomination, Senate Democrats appear to have two options, get out of the way or get run over. Senate Republicans' enthusiastic backing of President Trump's nominee ensures majority support even before the confirmation hearings begin on Monday. But the Republicans also hope that enough Democrats are won over by Gorsuch or recognize the inevitability of his confirmation that they join in efforts to head off an explosive showdown over a filibuster. Alan, if you had to look into your Chartakian crystal ball, what would you see?
Well, I don't think there's much doubt. Unless something extraordinary happens, he's in. There's enough so that they've been leaking some of the positions that he's had in the past, which are basically, you know, pro-individualism, not left, but moderate position. That's in a hope to bring those Democrats over where they want them to be. I think the assumption is he's going to be confirmed, unless, of course, they figure something out and they say something that nobody expected to see.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree, Alan. I think it's inevitable unless there's a surprise that we're unaware of. But I think we would have heard about it by now. He is well coached and well spoken, and he'll say very little, like many of the others who go up before the Senate panels. But, you know, it just is very difficult for some Democrats to sit and face the inevitability of this while they had the humiliation of Merrick Garland's nomination last year by President Obama, which was around a year ago. Yeah, it was it last March? It was only about a month after Scalia died. But what good does it do to dig in and you know, fight this when it's inevitable? And yet,
well, you have to have the hearing. So, I mean, theoretically, you get your pound of political flesh for whatever reason.
Well, you know, Mike makes a very good point. You know, and I hadn't really put it into that perspective, but this is a time to educate the American people about how Trump and the Republicans, particularly really the Republicans, corrupted in the Senate, corrupted the constitutional process. It's prescribed. It's right there. It says that the president nominates, and they had a year to do it. And they, in fact, then say up or down. And by the way, they're always the first ones to yell up or down. We want an up or down vote, up or down vote. Now, I think a lot of Americans have sort of either put that into the background or forgotten it. So maybe this hearing could be used to some degree for that. Otherwise, we're going to get a long, boring lecture on why Marbury versus Madison was so important and whether Marbury got his commission.
Nice.
Do you think, Alan, I've heard this too, that people like Chuck Schumer are going to really try to batter Gorsuch with a lot of questions in regards to try to get to some sense as to what he would do to stand up to the president on issues such as the immigration order and the executive order on immigration, and to get an idea of how those two forces would work. But even if you batter the hell out of the guy and he's confirmed, does it ultimately make any difference? Not really, right?
No, and by the way, I think I know enough about Schumer to know that he's not going to do that, not that way. I don't think he's going to go after him hammer and tongue, because I think he might ask it. I think the one thing that Blumenthal and the others are very interested in is Roe v. Wade. But you know what he's going to say. He's going to say all of these are going to come before the court. I can't possibly address them now because it would be improper, judicially improper, and he will take a high tone.
Yeah, unless he makes a mistake and he gives them some opening, I think it's going to be fairly perfunctory. They'll get to grandstand a little bit and talk about the process. But in the end, if the Democrats pretty much go along with this, barring any unexpected twist, they'll demonstrate that they are adhering to the constitutional process, and they can take the moral high ground and say, we did what you wouldn't do a year ago, and, you know, throw that in the face. Not that that carries a lot of weight with the public. But I don't know
if it does.
Yeah, I don't know if it does.
Well, Alan, as you have said many times, the big one is going to be the next confirmation hearing, whenever that comes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That'll be the tough one. And it's going to be that's going to be that's going to really be right now. They will have a majority on the court. The Republicans will have a majority. And by the way, for anybody who thinks that these are judges and that they're not political nonsense, it's a bunch of nonsense. We all know it now. It's been proven time and again. The political scientists look at it. You know, these are Republican nominees versus Democratic nominees, with an occasional exception where somebody comes over to the other side because they have a fit of conscience.
And with those ideologies, you look at someone like Gorsuch, who is difficult to really make out to be the devil, right? I mean, this is a guy
right.
who seems to be a very passionate defender of the law and has a distinguished career. And those who have clerked for him, who have worked for him, have said that he is really top quality.
Yeah, you know, I had a friend who worked at a huge New York law firm. And one day I asked him, I said, what happens, you know, they get $1,000 an hour or something like that. And I said to him, what happens when you make a mistake? And he said, we can't make mistakes.
Yeah.
Can't make mistakes.
Right.
There was
and I think, yeah. What'd you say?
No, I was just going to make reference to the story this morning on NPR about how he was questioning women who work at big law firms who are dishonest about their plans to have a family and sort of deriding that. One of his former law students said that. But that kind of thing can't derail it. It'll just make people angry at him, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, Trump is the president based on his ability to say terrible, terrible things about women and others. I just don't. I don't know how much faith I have in the American people. We got some of it spiritual. We just
wow.
got a letter, Joe, out of it.
Holy mackerel.
What?
I don't know how much.
Yeah.
I don't know how much faith we have in humanity anymore.
Wow.
Well, we just got another letter from somebody who said, you know, you don't have any women on the show today. That just shows you who you are. And now I know, because Joe and I are very good friends, and Joe reached out to Rosemary, who's still away, and to Teresa, who couldn't do it, and the rest of it. So there are always a few who will say something cruel and unusual. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know how much people feel committed to the idea that you know, a conversation about law clerking will make a difference in the American body politic.
Yeah. Just for the record, you know, we try to keep the panel as sort of balanced and as possible. That's
sure.
step one. And then you try to get, you know, that male-female difference. That's step two. And step three is just trying to fill the damn chairs.
Right. That's where I come in.
You know?
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
There comes a point where if everybody else says no, well, guess what?
Sure. Bring on Orson Bean. Absolutely.
Orson Bean. Frank writes to us and says, hasn't anybody noticed that Trump's behavior is basically a mimicking of Putin's because he sees Putin as a role model and mentor? Trump's goals are the same as Putin's. An 80% approval rating that Putin has created is what Trump wants, and so Trump copies him, but a lighter version of fascism. Putin literally kills his opponents. Trump just blocks them and the press's access. Putin lies to the people, and so does Trump. Putin is super rich, and so is Trump. Putin controls the media, and Trump does the same with Twitter. On and on. The marriage is made in hell. Joe.
Yeah, you know, Joe.
Yes.
You know, Joe, there's a big difference between what goes on in the United States and Russia. I'm sorry. It really is. I mean, we suspect Putin's been murdering people and, you know, that there aren't these. But even here, where two houses of Congress are controlled by the Republicans, I got to tell you, there's still a constitution. There's still separation of powers. There's still a minority who has a significant voice in what is going to be heard today. You know, I think that while it is true that the comparison could be made, these are not the same countries.
We got this letter from Joe, who said the very first question Democratic Judiciary Committee members should ask Gorsuch, do you justify the Senate's 2016 block of Merrick Garland's nomination? Bob in Milford says, I don't think Trump can fire Comey, as the FBI's director's term is 10 years. Not sure, but I
no,
think
he can.
It's true.
He can.
He can.
He can fire. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up this abbreviated panel edition, and we will talk about other stuff, including the now-famous meeting between Angela Merkel and Donald Trump.
Yeah,
we'll talk
October,
about that.
Awkward.
Yeah. we'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Marshall and Sterling Wealth Advisors, providing wealth management, retirement, and financial planning, 401ks, and more for individuals, families, and businesses, ms-wealth.com. The New York State Maple Producers Association hosting Maple Weekend open houses this weekend, March 25th and 26th. Details at mapleweekend.com. Hudson Beach Glass Beacon, a contemporary glass and jewelry gallery, plus a hand-blown glass studio and fine art upstairs, hudsonbeachglass.com. Planned Parenthood Health Centers, offering health services and education, including birth control, family planning, LGBT services, and more. Planned Parenthood Mohawk Hudson, planonit.org. And from Spicer art conservation of textiles, objects, paper, and upholstery, serving private owners and institutions since 1995, treating heirlooms and antiquities, 518-765-2142.
The American press had a field day with the meeting between Angela Merkel and Donald Trump on Friday. Meanwhile, in Germany, the press put it this way, could have been worse.
I love that.
Could have been worse. But for us, for anyone who was watching it live, it was, as Mike indicated before the break, incredibly awkward. All of this was going on, of course, as our American brain trusts were trying to work with the British to convince them that we weren't dissing them too much after Sean Spicer's remarks on Thursday about being responsible, and saying, "Oh no! You don't understand. We heard it on Fox News." So now the strong relationship with the U.S. with Germany, I assume it's still strong. But I'll have to tell you, one of the greatest pictures I've ever seen is that look that Angela Merkel gave Trump at one point, where she just kind of squished up her face, like, "Really? What? Huh?"
I actually...
Does that seem universal?
Well, there was a lot of that, but I actually agree. I believe Sean Spicer's version, and that was that in that noisy room, he just didn't hear her offering her hand to do a handshake, and he shook her hand other times. I think a lot of is being made of that, but he, you know, he's in his 70s, Joe, and he can't hear that well. Sorry, Alan.
Oh, ouch. But your hearing is perfect,
right.
Sir.
Well, I'll be back to you when I... consider the right retort, Mike. However,
all right, we'll see you next week.
That's good. See you next week.
I'll give Mike his due here and say, okay, maybe that could have been happened. But when the woman turns around and puts her hand out, I would assume that Alan, even if he couldn't hear, would look at her and say, oh, and put his hand out. Well, doesn't
right,
that make
right.
sense?
Now, look, sure. Yeah, it does. I have a few things to say about this. First of all, I think I read in the paper that Trump's approval rating in Germany is 12%.
Yes.
That's
slightly
that's
higher here in the States.
Yeah, what'd you say?
Slightly higher here in the States, 37%.
Yeah, slightly. Yeah, right. Okay. But 12%. Now, remember that Merkel has a very tough election on her hands because she's got rampant Trumpism going on in that country also. So keep the immigrants out. You took 1 million people. You shouldn't have done that. She's my hero, but I think she's great. But I think she's going to have a tough election, and she knows it. So she had no real incentive to kiss the guy on the cheek. That's for sure during that time. And I think that I think she played it right down to the exactly the right way of doing this.
So,
which was, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, so you have this dynamic, and sure, it's strained no matter how you look at it. And I think you can put a good face on it, and probably both sides would have liked to put a good face on it. The next morning, Donald Trump tweets that, despite what you heard in the fake news, I had a great meeting with Angela Merkel. Nevertheless, Germany owes vast sums of money to NATO, and the United States must be paid more for the powerful and very expensive defense it provides to Germany. So, what do you make of that? How does that?
Well, then the Germans come back. The Germans come back and say, that's a lie, too. That's not true.
Yeah.
We don't owe that money. And so you have Trump denouncing fake news, and then the next moment, you hear the Germans saying, that's not true, that's the fake news.
Mike, what do you think?
Well, in the end, if we need Germany, they'll be there for us. And in the end, if they need us, we'll be there for them. I think the diplomats know that. I think the Congress knows that. I think the people in the German government knows that, but it's politically expedient for them to have a not friendly relationship and still politely get along with each other. I just don't think it's that big a deal.
But what is the political expedience of having a cold and awkward press conference? Do they need to do that at this time? Did either one really need this? Now, Alan mentioned that maybe Angela Merkel needed it.
Well, I agree. It helps her because if she had cowed up to Trump and made nice, it could have hurt her with the support that she does have. But why
a meeting at all? In other words, you could do a lot of that over the phone. Obviously, they wanted a public appearance. To what end?
Do you think they wanted it to be a little better? Yeah, I think they probably wanted it to be more dignified, maybe more like the Chinese premier and Rex Tillerson, which was very dignified and very polite and very friendly and diplomatic. Maybe Trump is just not capable of being diplomatic. Do you think that's possible?
Well, but it's clear that he's meeting everybody, and that's to make it the picture for the American people that he is capable of being a president-like person. In the international relations, but they're shuffling them all in and out of the White House, good and bad.
Yes, he is rather president-like sometimes, isn't he?
No.
When he sticks to the script,
There's an article in the Washington Post this morning that talks about the White House's installation of senior aides at cabinet agencies to monitor loyalty. There are these loyalty monitors within the Trump White House. So they have referred to it as a shadow government, but it's political appointees who report to the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. They're charged to make sure that the secretaries and their staff members carry out the agenda by the president and stick to the approved talking points. So how welcome—
This is nothing new, Joe.
No, I know. But how welcome are these people into the fold to know that there's a hall monitor there?
As good as the Internal Affairs Division of a police department is. I mean, let's face it. Governors, and I can name two of them, won't right now, have had people in as commissars. You know, the Russian army, when Stalin was the Soviet dictator, he would put commissars into each army unit, and their job was to make sure that everything was going well, and people were scared to death of them. So I think that the same thing exists here. We have seen, right, Mike? I mean, this is something right up your sort of alley here. We have seen that in the beginning, you had press secretaries. They had a certain amount of freedom for the people they were representing, and then it all changed. And now it's one person sitting at the top, and if one of the press secretaries says something that is not not run through,
Zenyamuka. Right, and that was under Pataki, but I mean, I think that same kind of control exists under the current Andrew Cuomo administration.
Absolutely, it does.
You get PR people for the various departments unwilling to talk to you on the record. They just want to get a question, and then they want to get back to you by email, which means it's been sent by the second floor and approved. And they, you know, I mean, why even have a spokesman if that's going to be that way? But as you said, Alan, it's not unusual for somebody to try to control the message and make sure that the people working for you are aligned to your policy and to help you promulgate your policy. That's not so unusual. I like the other Washington Post story over the weekend, which talked about how Bannon and Reince Priebus are sort of one side, and the New Yorkers, the guys from Goldman Sachs who are sort of aligning with Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, her husband, to try to control the president and access to the president. It sounds like there's a real power struggle going on there. And, you know, that when you have it at that level, issues of loyalty, who cares what the secretary down the hall is doing, you know?
you know, it won't be the first time, I can tell you that right now. When I worked for the police commissioner down in New York, you had guys in the hall say, the commissioner wants you to do this. And the other guy would say, no, the commissioner wants you to do this. So everybody was speaking with the commissioner's voice. Interesting. Mm. Same thing with the president.
Well,
that's what we do when you're not here, by the way.
Well, you had it in Clinton's administration. Remember the Friends of Bill, FOBs?
Yes.
You know? Right. Everybody invoked Bill's name. Bill wants you to do this. Bill wants you to do that. You know.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us this morning. Do join us on, we won't be here tomorrow, but do join us on Wednesday for a new show. We'll be covering the Senate Judiciary Committee's confirmation hearing for President Trump's nominee, Neil Gorsuch, tomorrow during this program. It'll be on pretty much all day tomorrow, so you get to hear that. Coming up next, the House Intelligence Committee is holding a hearing on Russian interference in the 2016 election. FBI Director James Comey and the Director of the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers, will testify. My thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Thanks also to our panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Ray Graff, and to our engineer on the board, Rob Chacone. And I want to thank you for joining us for the roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Stay tuned now for live coverage from National Public Radio.